The footy is back in March, and so is Chadstone Toyota as a sponsor of True Bloods.
Aren't we glad about that, Deeble? And you know what? Toyota's new Hilux can help you do these three things. It gives you all the power you need, it allows you to make an entrance, and most importantly, Deeble, it keeps your tools safe.
How good is that, Mads? And Chadstone Toyota have an offer for you. If you take delivery of your Toyota before the 30th of June, you can get $1,500 worth of genuine accessories. How good's that, Mads?
How good is that, Deeble? And that's for the Hilux SR5 Rogue GR Sport as well. T's and C's apply.
This is Tom Harley, and you're listening to True Blood, the number one independent Sydney Swans fan podcast.
Jeez, this is the most one-eyed podcast.
Yeah, it's what we're here to do.
Let's go. Let's actually go.
For mine, boys.
For yours, Deeble.
I'm about to blow a gasket in here.
You've kicked 3 goals for the day, Deeble.
What is going on?
Damaging team.
Damaging disposal.
He's been very, very average.
Our best is the best in the competition. This is True Bloods, the number one independent Sydney Swans fan podcast, and we are back on a Thursday night, and we have the pleasure of being joined by the CEO of the Mighty Swannies, Tom Harley. How are you going tonight, Tom?
I'm going great, guys. Thanks for having me on. And I've been knocking down your door to get on this podcast as opposed to the other way around. So I'm glad we can make it happen tonight.
Sensational. Tom, it's Mads here, mate. We met you at the 150th Guernsey launch, which was a stellar event, although I think Deebs may have accosted you at the Adelaide Oval President's Lunch in round 22 last year. Any truth to that rumour?
There was no accosting. The reality was we're at the pre-match functions for the Crows, and to be fair to say, I was looking for friends that night. We were grossly outnumbered, and they were a very, very confident Crows room that night too, and we all know how that ended. So, yes, we reacquainted each other at the 150th. Part of the 150th celebration a couple of weeks ago in Sydney, which was great.
And how good was that that event? And for us to be invited along by the club, we just thought it was a phenomenal initiative and something that was executed so well. And it looks like those sort of events are going to be part of the fabric of the club moving forward. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it is. And we're really grateful for you guys making the effort to come along. And I guess for the listeners who weren't across it, it was, one of a number of events we're hoping to have, or we will be having this year to celebrate our 150th year. And this particular one was an event at Swans HQ in the foyer, which is a spectacular backdrop. The event was in partnership with Nike, who are unbelievable partners, and to launch the special theme jumper that we wore in opening night. And, I mean, our view as a club is, particularly in our 150th year, is, we're really proud of our rich history, and equally we're excited about what we think is a really bright future. So getting that balance right, we're landing on sort of fresh nostalgia, but certainly doing things with a forward-facing lens, looking at things through a forward-facing lens. And I thought it was a great night. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so did we, mate.
Yeah, it was a fantastic night, Tom. And the Swans HQ there, it's a fantastic building. We've had the pleasure of walking through it a couple of times. That was the second time we were there. But that was sort of first tabled in 2018, and you came on board as the CEO in 2019. Would you have to say that's sort of one of the big achievements of since you've been in the role, you know, the unveiling and the opening of the new HQ there?
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. And well before I joined the club, we're in the back of the Churchill Barongal stand at the SCG, and look, the facility was fine. As we often say, the 20 kilo plates surprisingly still weighed 20 kilos, whether the gym was magnificent or not. But the board had great foresight around what the future home of the Swans might look like. But the overarching and determining factor was we wanted to stay where we are, or as close to possible as where we are, and that being near the SCG. So, you know, once you start from that position, the options were pretty thin. But when the chance to go through a really competitive tender to secure the lease for the Royal Hall of Industries We put everything into that, and I was fortunate enough to be a part of that. Certainly not a lead part of the early stages. We had our bumps along the way with COVID. We actually had to surrender the lease, which was heartbreaking. But to see it come to fruition and move in about 14 months ago now, it's been game-changing. It's really, on so many different fronts, from functional to operational to ability to host our fans and members, our partners, our past players, and importantly prepare our men's and women's team to compete in the elite competition. So, we're very grateful of all the work that was put into that, and it's just magnificent.
Yeah, for sure. And there's no surprise that, it's all starting to come together on field as well, having the state-of-the-art facilities we've got there. And I think we're starting to see the fruits of that on field. And using HQ as the sort of the home to work off as well. We've had the initiative of, the march to the ground for opening round. That was fantastic. It looks like the club is possibly moving forward as that's could be a permanent fixture for home games. It's fantastic to see what we can do now with such a facility.
Yeah, it is. And our chairman, Andrew Predham, has been a key driver of this. And one of the things he would often remind me of, he would say, buildings matter. And in this case, I'm a firm believer in that. So, look, we're a football club at the core of what we do. We all exist in terms of the staff that sits around our football programs to give our players the best chance to have a really fruitful career. So we want to make sure that we don't leave any stone unturned when it comes to that. And so if the performance and the preparation of our teams is at the core of it, then how can we perhaps use that canvas to engage with fans and members and corporate partners? And the march to the match in the opening round was great. It was an unbelievable spectacle, and we'll be doing it again on Saturday night. We're still in that sort of test and learn phase, but the players are right on board, and they really enjoyed welcoming our fans and members into their sort of inner sanctum pre-game, and then obviously got some great energy walking down Driver Avenue with them. And I guess that's a bit of a window into the type of club that we want to be going forward, making sure that we're constantly striving and stretching and progressing in all aspects of our footy club.
And I think that you've hit the nail on the head there, Tom. I think the interesting thing about footy clubs is you really want to take the, because the supporters are the fabric of the club, right? And you really want to take them on the journey with you. And I think you guys are doing a bloody sensational job of doing that so far, right? And I think when Deebs and I left the 150th Guernsey launch, all we could talk about is how positive and how upbeat the attitude and the vibe of everyone at the club is. Can you talk a bit about the belief the club has in themselves this year?
Yeah, the reality is we're playing a really tough competition, and it's designed, and both men's and women's, mind you, it's designed to have teams oscillate between first and 18th. And so all the clubs really should be thinking about, we certainly are, is how do we sort of minimise that oscillation, if you like. And one of the things that we hold really dearly, and it's not a silver bullet, and it's also not a God-given right to get right, is you do the things that you can control are the people that you bring in your organisation. Now, in a football team, that's really obvious for the fans to see. That's the players. You've got the draft and you've got trade and free agency. And so we want to make sure that we're bringing the best players into our club. But the other side is the staff. And there are two parts of the staff. There's the football performance staff, coaches and doctors and physios, strength and conditioners and the like. And then there's the commercial administration membership sponsorship team, and I always say to the guys and the girls who have the great privilege of being responsible for recruiting people in, just choose really wisely. That is absolutely within our control to be across the type of people that we bring in, and I'm really proud of our staff. I think we all know why we are employees of the Sydney Swans. And they do, and I'm love that you've picked that up, guys, around the vibe, if you like. Our staff are fantastic, and we just want to make sure that, you know, that projects outwardly to our members. And again, it's not a God-given right to get right, but we take the recruitment of all of our people really seriously.
Yeah, and we can only echo those sentiments as well. The interactions we've had from people at the club, like whether it's Andrew Redden or
Tom Chadwick
or Michelle in the social media team, they reach out with open arms, and you know, it's they're a product of the environment of the Swannies, mate. That's for sure. And yeah,
that's great.
To touch on sort of the recruitment aspect, we were very active in that in the last off season, Tom, and in our chat back in 2023 at the Adelaide President's Lunch. I may have had a few cups of courage, you know, to ask the hard questions. And you said to me, I said that there's money in the salary cap, and we're going to be active. That's what I got out of you. And you were true to your word, Tom, but how have the recruits settled in? It looks great on field, but, you know, Brody Grundy, Taylor Adams, James Jordan, Joel Hamling, it was a very active off season for us.
Yeah, it really was. And you know, you obviously plan, and salary cap management and salary cap planning and list management is of great interest to the fans, and we know that. And I have a lot of conversations with fans around list management. I think the media outlets do a terrific job in whetting that appetite. So we knew that we had the ability to be quite active for a number of reasons. We've been very much a retention focused club, I guess, over the past couple of years. We do think we've got some good young talent that we want to lock away, but at the same time, one of the things that we identified that we had some tactical, and I guess specific tactical needs, inverted commas, and, you know, Ruckman was that, and some bigger bodies around the midfield. And the other one was locker room experience. You know, when you have people like Lance Franklin and Josh Kennedy and Heath Grundy, Nick Smith, these kind of guys come off your list over a period of time, they do leave a void. And I often say there's no substitute for time on the block, and you just don't know what you don't know. And and the only way you can get that is through lived experience. So as impactful as those four players you mentioned have been in training, and certainly in Brody and James's case in the first couple of rounds on field, what they've added to the locker room in meetings and just in general experience is invaluable.
That's particularly clear with Brody, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Brody has played at all Australian level and played in grand finals and has seen a number of clubs. So he's had some unbelievable highs. He's had some challenging lows the last couple of years. Taylor the same. You know, people forget James Jordan is a premiership player for Melbourne.
They do.
Joel Hamling's a premiership player at the Western Bulldogs. So they're the little intangible parts that when you're looking at who you're going to bring into your footy club. Okay, yep. I reckon they can add something there, and there. So, I guess when we caught up in Adelaide, I'm not sure how confident I was that we were going to be able to pull them all off, but we were certainly going to have a crack.
Tom, you talked a bit about the strategy around list management, and I mean, we've been a phenomenal team at player retention over the years. It's been really good to see. We do have a question from Andrew Risby on the socials, who asks, what does the introduction of the Tassie team sort of mean for list management moving forward, and considering the expected draft compensation and access Tassie will likely be afforded, strategies do you, so you sort of have to think, I mean, you're always thinking ahead, right? But that's something that's on the horizon.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, when a couple of things before getting to the specifics on Tassie, which the ink's not dry on what those concessions and rules might be, but we're starting to get a bit of a sense as to what they might be. If you go, let's wind the clock back before free agency, you had the draft, and the only vehicle to move clubs was via trade, and three parties need to agree to that. Then free agency was introduced, and so once free agency was introduced, and we're seeing it all the time, good young players signing up to free agency eligibility, We're seeing longer term contracts to extend through the free agency window. Mm. So that's the consideration clearly that plays out. And now, the current crop of, let's call them, they're probably the year 23 and 24 and unders. That will be nearing free agency around 2027, 2028. As I say, we're not entirely sure when Tassie will come in, but it'll be around about that time. That's another consideration. So I would expect, and I'm not talking specifically to our club, but probably out in the industry, it's another threshold. So some players might say, you know, I'll just take me to free agency. Others might say, you know, take me to Tassie.
Yeah.
When Tassie come in, and that timeline might be different to their free agency eligibility. So it's another thing to factor in. And I think the list management space will evolve over the next couple of years. I know mid-season trading has been tabled as well, not for this year, but would I be surprised if it comes in next year? No, I wouldn't. So there's another avenue as well. So you've just got to make sure that you're constantly thinking about all those sorts of things.
Are you a fan of the mid-season trading idea?
Yeah, in its purest concept and form, I am. I think, like anything, you do need to spend some time really interrogating all the different consequences and try to unearth those unintended consequences. And mm-hmm. I do think it's very easy for a player to literally roll out of bed and move from Collingwood to Richmond.
Yeah.
A little bit different to move from Collingwood to the West Coast Eagles.
For sure.
So, or obviously in our case, the Sydney Swans. So I think just let's work through some of those things and just be mature about those conversations. There's a lot of things that bounce around in our game, and we all protect our patch fit really ferociously, as we should. But when it comes to big ticket items like a mid-season trade, we really got to rise above our own backyard and think, okay, how does this work for the Queensland clubs, New South Wales clubs, the WA clubs, as opposed to always just going, no, this works because it will work. You've got to take, a wider lens to that.
Yeah, for sure. And we're always preaching that at True Bloods, mate. We battle against the Victorian bias media down here, mate. So we're always flying the flag down here.
Very good, very good.
Now, mate, I think it's so important to have a very stable, position of the board, and with the success on field, stems from how stable our board has been over the years, and you're obviously a part of that. And having the likes of Leo Barry and Mickey O sitting on the board now, how's the impact of those guys? And does that keep it relevant and fresh, and those new ideas coming in?
Yeah, it's a really good observation. The not a lot of fans, punters think about what happens behind the scenes, but I've been involved in the game for long enough to really appreciate the importance of a stable board, and certainly in the role that I've got, there's no more important component to my role than having a stable, supportive board and certainly chairman. So I'm extremely grateful for the environment in which I work and I guess the relationship, both personal and professional and personal, that I've got with Andrew Pridham, our chair, Richard Collis, our former chair, and Ryan, our former CEO, former board member, now AFL commissioner, and our board. Play a really strong governance role. They also roll their sleeves up and get their hands dirty when required. And no better example of that than the coming to life of the Sydney Swans HQ. And then you mentioned Leo and Mick, and they're our two member elected board members as part of our constitution. I think really good football clubs, and certainly football clubs that have had periods of success, are able to weave that common thread from generation to generation really well.
Yeah.
And, Mick and Leo played in 05. Kirky and Benny Matthews played in 05, and Amon Buchanan there in our football department. Macca was obviously captain of our 2012 team. And so weaving that sort of thread through that, when you've got Errol Gould and Chad Warner, Isaac Heaney, these kind of guys, they don't have to look too far to see where it all is knitted, how it's all knitted together. We're very fortunate that we've had success over those periods, but I don't think it's necessarily an accident, because we've have made, certainly well before my time, made conscious decisions to have that common thread run through our football club.
Would you say that is all-encompassing of the Bloods culture per se? You've got, you know, sort of older guys who did it in 05 around the club being able to impart wisdom onto the younger crop?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, culture is really just the way you do things, and obviously we know that our culture's got a name to it because it gets spoken about a lot by the Bloods culture. But the important part of that is, you know, it's almost the foundational elements of who you are and what you stand for in an organisation. But like anything, it evolves. And I guess having the benefit of those 05 guys around, the 012 guys around, and then the next sort of generation coming through, it's not that you're seeking permission to evolve it. You just know that you've got sounding boards there when you sort of think, you know, we're going to go down a slightly different path because that's what life's all about. Ultimately, you got to keep moving forward.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
you've got really strong reference points to go back and have that conversation about. And I know, you know, Kirky heads up our player welfare and wellbeing, and as well as donning the purple and running around passing on messages. But he's a great sounding board for, you know, as those players I mentioned before say, hey, Kirky, you know, we're thinking about going down this path as a club, as a leadership group. What do you reckon? And he'll be, of course, mate, absolutely. This is your club. And the most important part in anything when you're involved in a sports team is understanding you're merely a custodian for that period of time. And just make sure that when you do walk out the doors, and we all do, that you've made a significant contribution to making that place better than when you walked in. And that's really the core of it.
Yeah, we love that. Yeah, I mean, I guess on a day-to-day basis, how flat or not flat, I guess, is the hierarchy at the Swannies? For instance, does sort of Papley and the Lizard sort of barge into Tom Harley's office, crack open a San Pellegrino and sit down and talk shop with you? Or what's the deal? Or are they escorted out by security?
No, it's pretty flat. I do have the benefit of having lived through a football club environment before and understanding, you know, the banter that goes with it. I find our players are not backwards in coming forwards and giving me feedback on fashion. They're very quick to do that. They're also very quick to ask me if they want something as well. So I'm constantly checking myself as to the touch points that I have with the players and the football department. After a couple of years in the role, you know, like anything, you're learning as you go. I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, footy is my one wood as a football administrator. And so I like being close to both of our football programs, our men's and women's. I love sitting down at the end of the day on the couch in John Longmire's office, just chewing the fat, going into the match committee room, talking about the team.
That's elite.
I love when, you know, a player comes up fresh from the, you know, the coffee bar and just wants to sort of chew the fat and sit down in my office and talk shop. So I certainly try to make myself really accessible, but equally I don't impose myself on any of the players.
For sure, Tom. That's good. The interactions with the players must be sort of nearly a highlight of your day. You'd have so much serious stuff on your plate, and then, you know, the Lizard or perhaps he's coming up and saying g'day, it probably breaks the day up nicely.
Keeps you young.
Yeah, it does. I must admit, it's probably more me walking down than them walking up. But that's okay. I do. I mean, this sounds really silly. We are a footy club, and you know, the performance of your team is at the core of your business. And the reality is that drives the economic engine. It drives membership. It drives match day tickets. It drives corporate partnerships and the like. So I think it's important to be close to the footy club and to the footy program. And I mean, today is a good example. We have, you know, a captain's run or our main training session, and I'll just wander down, sit in the stands by myself and just have a look, you know. Yeah. And so it's a good time for me to sort of zoom out from the sort of operational components of my role and just sort of suck it in and watch the guys train and prepare have the appropriate conversations, or to be fair, listen when required to listen as opposed to have the conversations. And yeah, I love it. I've got the best job in the world.
So for sure.
Sounds like it.
Now, Tom, I'm going to pivot quickly to a time. It's not always sunshine and rainbows in this industry, Tom, as we all know. And the 2022 grand final was a hard day for all Swans supporters. And I'm sure it was at board level, players, families, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And we'd just like to get a bit of an insight into sort of the measures that were put in terms of, you know, the welfare of the players and staff and all those people who were invested so heavily, and also what was spoken about, you know, behind closed doors that you can reveal to, you know, make sure a day like that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, yeah. The first thing is it was a phenomenal year.
What a ride.
2022, it was a hell of a ride. And part of the fact that it was a hell of a ride meant that it was a hell of a thud. It was, you know, we got on an absolute run, and I'm not sure whether you were there, but there were 46,000 other people there with the prelim final.
We were there.
Yeah, it was just, it was, what a vibe that was.
You know? Oh, it was the best.
And as a footy club, we'd also just launched our W team, and we were in the final stages of building our new HQ. Like, the club was on a massive high. Mm-hmm. And went down to Melbourne, and it landed with a thud. And so the two things I think that I think are really important with regards to that day. One is, sure as hell, I'd rather be in the arena than not. And the fact is, we were in the arena that day. We fell short, but we were there, and we deserved to be there. The second is, and this is about a bit to what we spoke about earlier around just, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and there's no substitute for time on the block. At 1:30 that Saturday afternoon, we had very little grand final experience. By 5:30, we had plenty. Not the best experience, but we had plenty. And so so ultimately what you need to do is you need to learn from that and put it in your kit bag. And when you need to pull it out again, you pull it out. And that's good experiences, that's bad experiences. And so that was very much the theme upon review. John Longmire is an unbelievable coach, and when he's at his absolute best, or sorry, I should say him at his best, is he has an unbelievable ability to facilitate a group conversation around challenging topics. And the reality is, when you lose a grand final, however you want to unpack it, it's going to be challenging. And he just has an innate ability to do that. So it was important we reviewed it. It was important we got around each other. It was important that we acknowledged that, okay, we need to get better from this. And getting better manifests in so many different ways. But the important part was, okay, we were there. Great. We learned. We have developed experience from that. And at the right time, it will present again. And that might not necessarily be a grand final, but it might be first quarter against Melbourne, who've had a turbulent off season, those sorts of things. That's when you go, okay, I want to pull this out of my kit bag now. And I'm absolutely certain that we're better for the experience, as hard as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, Tom. It was
tough day. Tough day at the office for everyone.
Tough day. And that's the part that also, when it comes into your maturity as a player, and I've experienced both sides as a player. I've experienced I haven't won a premiership with the Swans, and I cannot wait for that day. But I've experienced a couple of losses, and you do get good perspective on what really matters. And when you lose a grand final, it hurts as hell as an individual, and no one hurts more than the guys and girls who are right at the coalface. But you've also got to appreciate that a lot of people are hurting.
You know,
a lot of people are really invested in what you do. And as you mature as a player, you start to understand, yeah, kicks, marks and handles are absolutely an integral part of what you do, but you're really actually contributing to enriching the lives of the people on the other side of the fence. And then you look at the other side of the fence and you see the devastation. That's another thing you put in your kit bag. So, you know what, I don't want to go back there again. If we've got a chance to do that again, and we've got a chance to actually do good for me on the field, but also do good for those folks on the other side of the fence, geez, I'm going to make sure that we execute on that a bit better.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I guess you see it from a unique perspective, having lost, but you've certainly also won a couple of flags as captain of the Geelong Footy Club, Tom. So I'm sure that that wisdom can be imparted as well. And of course, but I mean, the wins are great, right? But I want to actually focus on one particular time in 2005. And you'll know which one I'm talking about when I mention the name.
Oh, really?
Nick Davis. And he floats around the club, as we know. Yeah. How often does he bring it up to you?
Not quite daily, but weekly. We've got a membership group called the Redbacks. They're a great membership group, and we had our Redback cocktail party on, off track of days, earlier this week. And if Davo doesn't bring it up, sure as hell you will, or someone else will. And you know what? You fellas are probably too young, but it was one of the most memorable games. And to be fair, upon reflection, it sounds a bit sadistic, but it was a great game to be a part of. The SCG was absolutely heaving. My best mate through my playing career was a guy called Brenton Sanderson.
Yep.
He ended up being his last game, his 199th and last game for the Geelong Footy Club. And I was in the goal square when Dave kicked that fourth goal over the fence 2 seconds to go. You know, I had my hands running through my sideburns, you know, getting my swims out of eyes, all that stuff. But a little known fact, and Dave and I are close, and we, you know, he does some great work in our W program, the academy. Little known fact that I was actually on Davo for the first half of that game.
Didn't do too much. Didn't
go near it.
Yeah, well, let's just say they don't talk much about his first half, do they? But anyway, it was there was a structural move, and I haven't actually asked Bomber this, but I was moved off him, and we know what happened after that. But you know, it was a phenomenal, and clearly I'm a Swans person, and it's a phenomenal part of the Sydney Swans history, and. The same token, when you talk about experiences and putting things in your kit bag, there were some players running around in blue and white that name by the names of Ablett, Kelly, Bartell, Chapman, Johnson, Enright, Corey, Ling. You reckon they didn't learn something from that game?
Yeah. It was a big scalp, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so obviously the Geelong boys went on to do some pretty great things. Not in no small part to having gone through that that gut wrenching loss in 2005.
We've got some pretty cool moments, the Swannies. Like there's that. There's Leo Barry. There's Kieran Jack and Jared Buddy, McVeigh.
Buddy 1000.
Do you miss having the Budwar around?
I do miss having the Budwar around. Talk about a bloke who's got unbelievable presence. He walks into a room and he turns head straight away. I haven't actually seen him this year, the great Budwar, but I'm sure it's not too far away, and look forward to catching up with him.
For sure. And that sort of Buddy Franklin, big contracts, that type of talk, Tom. Mm. Now, there's been a bit of talk in the media this week. We've got a few guys to sign up. You've got your Errol Gouldens. You've got your Logan McDonalds.
Every second question was, when are you signing Errol? When are you signing Errol?
So we'll ask how contract negotiations are going and when we can expect a signature from those two in particular.
Yeah, well, I mean, first thing is, you guys would know that we don't talk about contracts in the public forum, but we're all amongst friends here. look, they're progressing, and they're progressing well. What I do know is Errol and Logan in particular are fantastic players and fantastic Swan people. So, you know, you're never confident until it's all done, but things tracking in the right direction, I would think. But you're right, it's around making sure that we keep all of our good young players, all of our good players together and create an environment, both physical but also sort of cultural, that, okay, yeah, we can see what we want to do here, we can see that we're on the right path and really leaning in on that. And, you know, we're not an individual game in the AFL, and even when you look at the NBA, for instance, you know, one player on the court is 20% of the output. One player in AFL has 118th or 123rd, however which way you want to look at it. So we're very much a team game and understanding of that. But, you know, we're acutely aware we've got some good young players whose contracts expire at the end of the year and working really well to ensure that it's a good result for everyone.
That was a very well-balanced, straight bet answer, Tom. I like it. Now, although, I guess, speaking of list management, although it was removed before you were appointed CEO, do you feel the removal of the cost of living allowance still sort of impacts, because of the cost of living in Sydney, it still impacts the way we manage lists?
Yeah, look, I was doing player contracts at the time when that was transitioned out, and without getting into the details of it, it was a two-year transitional period. We actually had some players who had signed contracts prior that transition period and extended beyond the transition period. So it was a tricky thing to balance.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone disputes the fact that, you know, Sydney's the most expensive city in Australia. So that's real. It's also the environment. You know, would we love to have some allowances around it? Yeah, we would, but we don't. So we need to make sure that we really champion the great things about living and playing AFL footy in Sydney. It's just it's a beautiful city. We've got a club that strives and you know, we are hell bent on giving our players the best chance to succeed. We've got an amazing facility. We've got a really integrated club with regards to men's, women's and all of the off-field staff as well. So we really need to do that well, and they're all contributing factors when it comes to players, both incumbent players as to whether they want to stick around long term, or also attracting players from other clubs. So it's not always about money. There's probably a reason, and not probably. New York costs more to live in than Delaware. There are some reasons why that might be the case, but in saying that, it was very tricky managing our way out of the cost of living allowance.
For sure. And that leads nicely into a question from one of the members of the faithful, Evan Lowry, who goes, how often does it become sort of a factor when sort of trying to trade for an interstate player and struggling to attract players to New South Wales due to the, you know, the cost of living? Is that a factor?
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely a factor. It's always raised. And so when we make our, without getting into the specifics of it, when we're making our pitch, and that's certainly the financials of a deal, we have to factor in that, particularly when there's a young family involved.
Yeah.
You know, 75% of our men's and women's lists are not from Sydney. So often when they start to have kids, or if they bring kids with them, young Joel Hamling, for instance, he's got a young boy who's about 14 or 15 months old with his partner. Now, that, you know, we need to be cognizant of that, and we need to ensure that we help him and the family with regards to living and care and support and all of those sorts of things. So, yes, it's absolutely a consideration. And, you know, that's why we invest significantly in our player welfare and wellbeing space. It's headed up by Brett Kirk, and Brett and his team has got Phoebe Jago, who plays a really strong role with our player partners and families, and Jared Hodges is a part of that team as well, who's our First Nations Indigenous liaison manager. So we make sure that we put the requisite support around them. But the reality is the market is different, and we need to make sure that the things that we can control, we execute brilliantly.
I'll tell you what, that job title seems to be tailor-made for Brett Kirk.
He's there's nothing he hasn't seen. So if you go through, if you had to sort of write the job description, Bloods legend, champion of the Bloods culture. He's been an assistant coach. Let's not forget he's been a broadcaster on TV as well.
Let's not forget.
I don't think anyone could ever forget that.
Thanks, Basil.
he's got five kids. He's done it all, Kirky, and no one loves the club more than he does, and we love him.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, just to echo sort of your sentiments of looking after the players' families and that type of thing. We've heard that firsthand. Yeah. We've had, you know, relations with Chad's parents. They've been great supporters of our podcast. And, you know, Dill Stevens, before he left the club, his old man, Rob, they couldn't speak higher of the support they get. The Hickeys, 100%. Yeah. But just to pivot once again, Tom, the introduction of the AFLW team has been huge for the club, and it's really brought us together as one. You know, the first year was a challenging year, you know, not getting that win on the board. But that second year, to be honest, Mads and I here, I wouldn't say skeptical was the right word, but found it hard to really enjoy it like we enjoy the men's game. But the second season progressed, Mads and I were the biggest fans and we were jumping on board, and the way the girls performed, and it's just been such a huge successive move for the club, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's great to hear you say that. I've been involved in the AFL competition since I was 18, and so those years are starting to creep up. You know, I've seen been part of some unbelievable highs and some really challenging lows in my involvement in, you know, the men's game. I loved the build of our AFLW team. We were given very short notice. We weren't set up to succeed, and we knew that pretty early on in the piece. So you go in with your eyes wide open, you're optimistic, all these sorts of things. But once we realised, hey, we're up against it, made the very conscious decision, okay, what are our measures of success? And what we landed on was, given in some instances, some of our players were given days' notice before they moved up to Sydney. And let's be, this is an average salary back then of, you know, around $20,000. And our measure of success was for if the women that we draft and recruit after season one want to stay, that's massive, because that means we've controlled the things that we can, which is around the environment, the experience, the integration, all those sorts of things. We had to make some list changes and some list spots, but I'm proud to say every player that there was one or two that had extenuating circumstances and sought to be traded. But outside of that, everyone wanted to stay. And I thought, gee, that's amazing. So we've got to acknowledge and reward that. But also we've got to get better. And we had more of a lead time, and I was really confident in Scott Gowans and Kate Marnie. So we went to work again. If you'd spoken to me like you did at the Adelaide game, it would have been, oh, we're going to be up to this in our eyeballs and recruiting players. And Chloe Malloy dropped, and that was a heaven send.
How good is she?
She's amazing. She's amazing. Then Lucy McAvoy jumped off the back of that. And then then you get a Laura Gardner that came from nowhere. And then we said the draft talent that came through. And so I felt really confident that we were going to be okay. Did I think we were going to go from no wins to seven and win a final? Probably not. But, geez, it's a bit like what we're talking about in 2022. It was a hell of a ride.
Yeah.
And the most important and pleasing aspect from mine is the engagement of the entire club. You know, John Longmire, poor old John, he had a horror run in the off season with flights. He was booked to fly to the Gold Coast final, and then that flight got cancelled. And then the following week, we got to play Adelaide, and his flight was delayed by 6 hours. But that's not the way he was committed to getting there.
Yeah.
The men's players were committed to getting there. And so when we get the feedback from the players, they feel like they are valued and they belong. That's the most pleasing part.
That was the coolest thing, seeing how much the boys got around the girls.
Yeah, and you know what? It's legit. If you speak to some of them about it, I've heard Millsy and Rand talk about it, both Sydney boys, that they're, you know, born and bred in Sydney, and then they've ended up playing for the Sydney Swans. So I've never had – once you start playing for a team, you don't get to support your team, if you know.
For sure,
They say, you know what, we've got a team that's supporting us, the AFLW Swans team, and it's legitimate.
Yeah, it looks really natural.
And it's authentic, yeah.
Hey, Tom, look, we're cognizant of your time. Mate, we just want to say thank you so much. We knew from meeting you and just – the general vibe around the club that we know it's going to be a really, really big year, and it feels like you feel that way too.
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, nothing. Just happens, and what will be, or I can reel off a whole stack of cliches if you want me to. But what I will say to your listeners, who I know are our true believers, you know, we are absolutely committed to doing our life's best work and giving our players and the men's and women's and all of our staff the best opportunity to succeed. And you know, you need a bit of luck on the way and all those sorts of things, but. I'm just one of the fortunate ones who gets to do this as a living, and rest assured to everyone listening that we are doing our absolute best to enrich your lives and give you something to cheer about on the weekend. So and part of that's coming on the True Blood podcast. So as I said, I knocked your down to get on as opposed to the other way. So thank you.
Oh, well, everyone's doing a really good job of bringing us all along for the ride, Tom, and. We're 2-0. It's upwards and onwards, and go those mighty Bloods, hey? Thanks for jumping on, Tom. We appreciate it.
Nah, anytime. Looking forward to Saturday night to make sure you come out and you drove.
Well, how bloody good was that, Madison Clark?
We are in safe hands.
We are. That's it. I mentioned it in the interview. The stability at the top, that's where it stems from, mate.
Dude, totally, totally. And having Sydney guys... You know, just scattered around the club. Yeah. Kirky, Nick Davis, Leo Barry,
Jared McVeigh.
Yeah.
How good.
We're in really good hands, man.
Yeah. But we hope you guys enjoyed that. Tom was really, really good with his time. And it wasn't a hassle at all. And when the CEO of your club is making time for people like us out here with the podcast.
The punters
of the Swannies. It's sensational. And as Mads says, we're in good hands.
Hey, Corey Warner in.
Corey Warner, great. Great news, isn't it?
Love it.
Great. I'm so happy he's getting his opportunity.
Absolutely. And this is a perfect game to have it in.
For sure. It'd be interesting to see what Foxy's injury is.
They said minor calf.
Minor calf. Well, that's a couple at least. Especially being a running beast like Foxy is. That's a couple. So you don't bring a calf back too early. So I hope they get that.
I really want Corey to get goal side, get dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. Play that role like Foxy's been playing it. Yeah, looking forward to Saturday night, Mads. But it's about time we get out of here, mate. We're slaving away in here, faithful. But you're listening to True Bloods, the number one independent Sydney Swans fan podcast. We're number one in your hearts for the second time this week. And we're number one on the charts, always faithful, speaking words of wisdom.
Up the potty. Deeble, how long has it been since you've had your wheels aligned?
You know what, Mads? It's probably been a little bit too long.
I wonder where you'd go to get that done.
I know exactly where you go, Mads. You call up Chadston Toyota and speak to the service team at 1547 Dandenong Road, or give them a call on 9568-0933 and book in your wheel alignment.
Love. Well, Debs, you can get 4 new tyres fitted by them, and that includes a free premium wash on the house. How good is that?
That is sensational. And don't forget about all the Hiluxes down there, whether it's your SR5, the Rogue, or the GR Sport. Take delivery before the 30th of June, and you get a $1,500 worth of genuine Toyota accessories.
How good, Deeble. And don't forget, T's and C's apply.
And follow them on your social medias too, Mads, at Chadston Toyota, and talk to Lee and the team. He's a big Swannies man, so get behind Chadston Toyota this year.